This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, three games on the slate last night. If you were with us yesterday, we said kind of the winners, the favorites need to win. Yeah, right?
From an NCAA tournament perspective, with your resume and what's at stake, there were three teams on the left side taking on three teams on the right side, and the left side being, hey, teams with double digits and wins in the tournament and all that stuff in the regular season. They needed to hold serve.
Yeah.
And Miami going on the road to have to win somewhere where they've never won before at Louisville. Notre Dame looking for revenge after losing earlier this year to BC.
Right.
And then North Carolina against Pitt. And yeah, Pitt's playing well, playing great, but FBI, FPI, FJI,
BPI.
Whatever. It had the Heels as a 94% favorite to beat Pittsburgh.
Right.
You had the game last night. And lo and behold, all three of them were in fights last night. Notre Dame had to win in overtime, had to rally late to get the thing overtime. They did. Miami had the lead, but Louisville put up a terrific fight and effort. And then the game you had was the stunner, where Pitt just rolled into Chapel Hill and went, yeah, this is cute. Watch this. Amazing.
You know, in this year of ACC basketball, we caution ourselves to not make resolutions, right, about what we know to be true, because what we think we know, sometimes we don't know.
Say it all the time.
All right, but here's the one thing I can say after seeing them in back-to-back games. This is a different Pittsburgh team now in February than it was a month ago, and it's clearly different than it was in December or November when the season started.
Or even a couple weeks ago.
That's fair, too. Ithiel Horton's return has made a huge difference. Just ask Florida State last week or NC State over the weekend. And now you can add Carolina to the list. The Panthers post their third straight win in ACC play. Last night they ride Horton's perfect shooting from behind the three-point line. Really nice effort from John Hughley, 19 points. Femi Odekali, 10 points, 9 assists. They beat North Carolina for the third time in the last four tries and for the second straight time in Chapel Hill. 76-67, and as the old adage goes, it really wasn't that close.
Yeah, I mean, this was just a good old-fashioned, we're better than you tonight, and it stunned me. I really thought North Carolina, with everything to play for this week, kind of hinted yesterday, can't look ahead to Virginia Tech. You got to take care of your business tonight. West, they've been terrific at home, right? That's the other thing that's so stunning about it. Yeah, it's great the Pitt's playing better and all that stuff, but North Carolina has really beaten up on people in their house, other than Duke coming to town. But last night, it was a total role reversal. Pitt just took the fight to North Carolina. Heels looked flat. They looked just kind of, just didn't have any energy. I don't know what was going on. Give Pitt all the credit. They were the better basketball team last night, and there was no questions asked.
17-point halftime deficit, the third largest halftime deficit for Carolina in the history of the Smith Center.
How about that?
That building's 35 years old.
Ithiel
A little
Horton,
longer than that, 36 years old.
Ithiel Horton was on the show this week. What happens? He gets the Packer and Durham bump. Goes 5 of 5 from 3. And, you know, it's just it's one of those games that you're just kind of, hey, North Carolina, you better wake up. And it was too late, man. That's a bad loss. Quad 4 loss. I mentioned North Carolina goes from a 37 to 45 in the net. Don't ask me to explain, but that's the way it works. And, boy, it puts even more pressure on North Carolina, looking for their first quad 1 win of the year on the road at Virginia Tech. That place is going to be a zoo Saturday.
Yep.
That's going to be some kind of an atmosphere.
Yeah, there's going to be something going on now in Blacksburg.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Folks will be there early, and they'll be there often.
The
4 o'clock start, those people will be in there at 2:30.
And the Hokies are hot. They've won 6 straight ACC games. They're starting to feel the vibe. And all these teams in front of them, with the double digit in the win column in the league, you keep having hiccups and throw-ups and stub your toes, and somebody gets red hot like Virginia Tech is right now, man, you can make some serious movement.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, to the University of North Carolina and the Educational Foundation, the Rams Club. Special night for our family last night, and folks have been kind here with ACC Network to kind of showcase what has transpired in the last 3 or 4 days in regards to my dad. His name was put on the communications and media building, which is adjacent to the Smith Center in Chapel Hill. And last night at halftime, a special ceremony, thanks to Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz for being a part of that, and John Montgomery of the Rams Club. And John joined Bubba the other day on the show, and Just really, really neat for us to see my dad honored that way in Chapel Hill permanently now with his name on the building. And thanks to the North Carolina Board of Trustees of the UNC system for approving that. And just meant a lot. So we're grateful for that as well.
Very cool. Well-deserved. Yep. And, man, he was the voice of the Tar Heels. No question.
Pretty good run. All right, let's go to South Bend, shall we? What did BPI say this number was again?
That number was 88.1, according to my records. BPI had Notre Dame 88.1% chance they were going to win the game. And BC had them in trouble. I'm telling you, BC came to play. They're like, yeah, we beat you dudes earlier this year.
Yeah.
You think this is going to be easy? Wrong.
Revan Galloway caught fire a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, our man who was 3 of 41 since Tiger Town.
He made three threes last night. And I'm telling you, Notre Dame was down 5 with about 3.5 minutes to go. And crowd was kind of sleepy. And Bray's over there, you know, screaming, trying to get people going. Let's go. Let's go. And BC was tough. They were ready to go. Tell you what, Grant, he's done a good job with this group. They are not an easy out. They play you tough.
Look. I don't know how it's going to end for Boston College and for NC State, and to that degree, Pittsburgh, who I saw again last night. 9 times out of 10, because there are no rock solids right now in ACC basketball. 9 times out of 10, those teams show up and give great effort.
No question.
And we've said that about Earl Grant almost from the start this year.
That's exactly right. So, and they've had some nights like everybody.
Absolutely.
You get your hat handed to you, but they were ready to go last night. They really caused a problem for Notre Dame. The Irish had to dig deep. Prentice Hubb made a couple big shots late, made a ton of free throws late. I mentioned it's an index card game. Yeah, it was, again, an overtime game. 39-18 was the advantage in free throw attempts last night in favor of Mike Bray's guys.
Wow.
End of the night, though, it's all about scoreboard. I tell you all the time. You can give me all the play-by-play you want. What was the score? Notre Dame wins. They're now still tied with Notre Dame and sets the stage for the Irish this weekend in Switzerland, taking on the Deacs in a really, really big game.
I know you don't vote, and I know you don't want to vote.
I'm not going to vote. Going to
vote, right.
Like that, really clear.
Yeah. Dane Goodwin, first team All-ACC?
Conversation, but I don't think he'll get it.
23 last night, and they needed him.
Well, 99-95. I mean, you like back-and-forth basketball. It was, again, a very entertaining night in the league. It was totally different than what you expected it to be. Because you really thought, oh, you may have three dogs tonight. You know, Louisville, they've really struggled. Miami's hot. Yeah. BC, they're not going to beat Notre Dame. Pitt's got no chance of winning Carolina.
Mm.
Well, all three of them were rock fights last night. Every one of them.
Let's take it to the Yum Center. Miami 70, Louisville 63, the final. Closer than you probably thought it might be. Jim Larrañaga has now won for the first time ever in Winston-Salem and in Derby City. Canes led for all but about 4 minutes of the ball game last night. If you're going to be in the double bye scenario, this is what you have to do when you get on the road. You just got to win the game. Find a way to win it. You said Charlie Moore was great early.
Made a lot of threes early.
Yeah.
Wong had a four-point play late. Mm. Louisville was always like within striking distance, but they're always like two possessions away. Yeah. Right. It was just one of those kind of feel out games. But again, you close. Can you close? How many times have we talked about teams this year in the league? Man, you just can't close. Miami closes. 7-2 on the road, right? That is strong. It's getting the job done.
There's a stat that would be really scary if we cobbled this together, and it would be like a five-minute stat, like who had the lead in the last 5 minutes and how often did you win it or lose it. I mean, it would really fluctuate in this league with some teams.
Well, we gave you the number inside 5 points of Notre Dame and Clemson yesterday, right? And again, the Irish add to that list last night with a four-point win. They're now 8-1 in games determined by 5 points or less. Clemson is 1-7. Now, when you look at the standings, it does not take long to figure out, well, why are we struggling or why are we winning? I mean, you've got to be able to close. And for Miami, I saw a stat, too, that they are now – they've won 17 straight games when they've scored 65 or more points. Again, you're looking for numbers for a team, 6-5 for Miami. They get to that number, you like their chances.
Let me give you a Louisville positive coming out of some of this. Dre Davis had 18 last night, L. Ellis 17, Noah Locke 11. For Davis, you know, he and Jalen Withers are guys we had some expectation of coming into the year, and it's been a rocky road, a roller coaster just like it has for the team. But you now, if you're in Louisville's situation, you know you're going to have a coach, a new coach at some point. So what you're looking for is guys who you can build momentum around. Davis is starting to show you a little bit of that. I keep an eye on kind of how that Louisville momentum is going to work, because you're clearly talking about next year, so you might as well think about the factors that could be a part of it. Now, we know how volatile rosters can be, but nonetheless, it's good to see Dre Davis get 18 last night on 7 of 13 from the floor.
And what a weird year for Louisville, right? I mean, this has almost been for a not good, great college basketball market.
Yeah,
this has really been a strange year.
Yeah.
You're coming off a year of what you thought it could be in the NCAA tournament, didn't get it. Had the COVID stuff. Again, you kind of all chalk all that COVID stuff.
Yeah.
It was a weird year, innit? Mm-hmm. But this year, you know, you lose Mac, the way that all went down. You're 4-0 in the league at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just like, man, can we just get this thing to the finish line? The kids are still playing hard.
Yeah.
And the effort there was, again, last night. I told you the second half of the Notre Dame game, I was really impressed, that dog mentality they had. So they're not just rolling over, playing dead, getting beat by 25-30. They had a chance last night. They sure did.
I want you to know that I pulled over on the side of the road last night over there at Rock Creek Dairy Road at I-85 last night to put my accounting together so the boys would have it this morning when they arrived.
Well, that's called team player.
Team player. So here's my accounting. There is absolutely no change in the top five. Carolina Virginia Tech will be an accounting game. I didn't list Virginia Tech twice, but I appreciate y'all listing them twice.
You really do love the Hokies.
I had Virginia behind Virginia Tech, but appreciate y'all nonetheless.
The next time somebody says that Western doesn't like Virginia Tech, I will point out you like
them
so
twice.
Much. You got them twice.
I like them so much. I had them twice. One moved up one, and one went down one.
So you're balanced.
You're damn right. Well, I mean, come on. Florida State 8. Pitt is up 2-9 ahead
of
Syracuse.
You got the Hokies this weekend?
I do.
Well, I tell you what. If you North Carolina fans think Wes has got something out for you, that may be true because the Hokies are on that list twice right there.
Syracuse.
Now we got Woody's got his building.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want.
That's it.
Can't take your name off of it.
Syracuse 10, Louisville 11, BC, Clemson, NC State, and Georgia Tech round out my 15.
All right, here's the Sweet 16.
Oh, boy.
There's some movement on mine. Duke, Notre Dame, Miami, Swiss, Carolina, Virginia, VPI. The Boeheim's 8, Pitt 9, Florida State. Here we go. NC State, you get the bump. You know why? Because you blew somebody out.
Yeah, the defenders.
Defenders, you go down. You know why? You got blown out.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson, you dropped to 14. And number 16 on this beautiful Thursday would be Tom Brady, unretirement rumors. I am so tired of all of it. Play, don't play. I don't care. Just make your mind up. One way or the other.
Or sell me a $78 t-shirt.
Whatever. When I heard the other day, he's talking about coming back. Oh, my God. Did we not just go through this? So, Tom Brady, you are 16th this week on accounting.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I bet Ham is ready now, don't you think?
Look
at
you got me. You got me.
Yeah, we got you. Yeah, we know. Come on. We know. This show does not play. Can you officially confirm we do not play, right?
Well, I saw you on TV the other night getting that award, so I have to take my hat off to you. Thank you for so much, fellas. That's a great intro.
Oh, man.
The only thing missing is the Packer and Durham mug. The only thing missing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. It's in my office in my shelf right next to my championship ring.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You got that handwritten note, too, didn't you? I said, do not sip from it unless it's a victory. That's what I told you. I said, do not sip from that bad boy unless it's a W.
Okay. I remember that.
Yeah. All right. I want to offer this to you. You told us when you were with us right around the turn of the calendar that youth and injuries, and this was a unique situation for you. Dare I say it's gotten more unique with now four starters basically sidelined. So for all the years that you've been in basketball, how much have you had to go back into your memory bank to develop kind of new logic, new philosophy, new coaching to get this team to at least keep moving forward? And I know what's been a tough year.
Well, it has been challenging. I had 1 year like this when I was at Miami when I had three. All-Americans had their second, two had their second knee surgeries in October, and the other one had a ruptured shooting, all the ruptured tendons in the shooting hand, and a fractured shin bone. So I've been through this before, but it's been challenging with these youngsters as we're so young in some areas to lose your veterans, and then you have to find ways to keep them motivated. And in the Carolina game, I thought Carolina was exceptionally energized, and they were very focused. And I thought that the close losses had a tendency psychologically to depress us a little bit, and we just were not in the same level of focus I thought the Carolina was. As much as we talked about it, I felt that we had to find a better way to communicate with our guys. And we came back in the next game, and I thought we upped our focus a little bit. But it's been extremely challenging trying to find ways to keep everybody from looking over their shoulder or finding ways to make some excuses as to why we can't get this done.
Coach, you know what, though? All of this eventually is going to pay dividends for you. I mean, you mentioned how young this team is. Guys are having to step up, put in crazy minutes. You may not get that dividend paid off this year. Maybe you will. But you know what? I guarantee you, next season, you'll look back at this crazy run and go, you know what? That will eventually help this program. And it also get everybody hungry. You know, people sort of just assuming, hey, it's easy to win games, just roll the ball out. No, it's not, man. It's work. It's tough. And you got to have really good talent, really good coaches. But I think somewhere down the road, this stretch is really going to help your program. And you're going to realize it instantly.
One thing that I've learned, nobody feels sorry for you. everybody's coming at you like you're the number one team in the league. And I think that's going to serve good for our guys, just to learn what it's like to go against teams at when they're at their very, very best. And unfortunately for us, you know, we've run into that. Guys have been shooting the ball very well against us. The quality of our depth kind of has gone down a little bit. But I really, really love what I see this team doing, coming together, staying focused. And hopefully that will be something that we can sustain for the remainder of the year.
Coach, I want to ask you about Raekwon Evans. And I want to ask you about him as a basketball player, but also his strength as a person. I know how important your faith is to you, and clearly we're seeing how important his faith is to him, and all the things he's going through. Have you ever seen a kid persevere to play more than Raekwon has, and what it means?
You have no idea what the challenges that this guy has gone through and the sacrifice he's made mentally, emotionally for his team. I mean, he was so emotional after the game the other day because his brother had cancer, and obviously the young man we had on our team was suffering. I mean, one of the managers, and, you know, it all came out in the locker room when I got in there. He was emotional, almost uncontrolled, and because it meant so much to him to go out and win the game under those circumstances. I experienced it because I lost my grandmother, my father, my mother, and two of my brothers all with cancer. So I know what that's like. And so he's stepping up, and I don't know where we'd be without him.
You know, you mentioned we've had Raekwon on the show, and he's been just great to talk to. The student manager, Coach, can you tell us about that story? Because we read about it and heard about it, and again, I can tell how emotional you are even talking about it now, but there's a lot of folks that don't know that story.
Well, he's a youngster that's been with our program now for a couple of years, and he was having some issues with not feeling very comfortable, and one of our doctors checked him out, and we kind of suspected that it was something major, and so he went home to Cincinnati and got with the doctors, I think, on Monday, a Monday evening or Tuesday, and they immediately identified the fact that he had stage 4 lymphoma. And one of those, somewhere like that. And then they've started the treatment on it, I think, today. And so our prayers are with him, and it really affected our players.
I can only imagine getting news like that and all the other kind of hurdles, if you will, that have been a part of this season. Now you turn after a win, though, and you got to stay on this journey. How important is the focus? How important is the next step for this team?
Well, when you communicate with young people, especially when they're adjusting and learning how to play at this level and trying to adjust to playing with different teammates and stuff, it's challenging enough. So when you lose the core of your team, your four starters, your top three leading scorers, and it affects you. So everyone else has to step up while they're still learning, going against people who have got great coaches and great talent. And so it's really, really causing us to be, you know, to have a different type of approach. You got to be demanding and hold everybody accountable, but you got to be understanding and patient to a point where you understand where you are in terms of development of your program. But the main goal is to go out and try to represent themselves, your program, and your school in the greatest fashion. That means you need to go out and give everything you have to win. And we've lost a lot of close games when we were in spite of not having a full deck. But I do think what you said earlier about us this having a positive effect on us. But there's no doubt, though, that when you're going through these things, it's challenged you as a player, as a staff, to maintain perspective as to where we are. But the objective is to go out and come as close as we can to reaching our potential game in and game out.
All right, this weekend you make the last road trip to Cameron Indoor to see this guy, Krzyzewski. Just your thoughts on Mike Krzyzewski. Forget about the game a second, but just your thoughts on Coach K.
I've just been amazed at what type of ambassador he's been for college basketball. You know, we've competed, but when I look back at his career and how he started and how young he was when he went to Duke, then I see what he's done. But the sacrifices that he's made to contribute to the overall betterment of the game, working on different committees with the NCAA, I don't see any way at all I could possibly have worked with the Olympic Committee, worked with the USA Basketball, work with the NBA, coach the Olympics, and then be the winningest coach in the history of college basketball. That just means you have a love of the game. You're going to do whatever you can because that's where your heart is. And I can't say enough about how gracious he's been, how the image that he's projected for our league and for college basketball, and we're going to miss him. I just hope that he maintains some connection with basketball, even though he's in his retirement. Because we need his voice. We need his reasoning, his ability, the wisdom that he brings to our profession, the respect that we all have for him. And he's respected all over the world, not only in college basketball, but throughout the United States. I mean, do you know how difficult it is to be teaching young teenagers and then to go and try to and coach adults, grown men? That means that everybody respects him and everybody else in between. I just think he's been the greatest ambassador of his era, and I can't say enough about him. We're going to miss him very much.
I will ask you this. We've had a lot of coaches say that we want to see Mike Krzyzewski stay in the game, so to speak. You're one of those guys. You've got a lot of waters run under your bridge, as they say, in the coaching world. What do you think he needs to – he can champion some things. You know that. I mean, he's helped, and you just mentioned he's covered all three levels, amateur worldwide, amateur collegiately, and certainly in the ties to USA Basketball, the NBA. Is there one issue here in your top of mind that you think that he can help us with in basketball?
Well, I think the wisdom and experience he brings to how college basketball is governed is where we need him the most. The way we govern college basketball through the NCAA, we have a lot of non-basketball people that's in decision-making positions. And we have people on committees that have not necessarily walked a mile in our shoes, so to speak. And I think that he would be he's been in the trenches. So having him, involved brings wisdom to the decision-making process that sometimes I feel that has been lacking. No disrespect, because I think the NCAA has a tough job, but I think that we formed this whatever the name of that committee was. It slips my mind that Miss Rice was head of. What I would love to have seen more of us coaches involved in that process, not to say that they didn't do a good job, but there are so many committees that have been formed over the years with athletic directors and sometimes with presidents and different professors on campus. And I wish that we had people with the experience that, that Coach K has had involved in those things, just as a person who could lend some practicality to, because of the experience that he, that, that he's been through.
Well, so how's your team? I know, listen, you're coming off the win against Clemson. You're making a road trip to Duke. You're hitting the road now for a little bit here, three straight on the road.
Come on now.
So, I mean, from a mindset standpoint, do you feel good coming down the stretch with what you've got? These kids will be ready to rock and roll, because that's going to be quite a challenge on Saturday night.
Well, I do feel that we're at a point where we're going to be who we are to the best of our abilities. I thought that I think that's where we are. I think our guys understand. They understand now, you know, that we can't have a pity party. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us, and we need to be at our very best and go out and just represent ourselves. I think we're in a pretty good place. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to win every game, but I think we're going to win it. The effort. I think we're going to give it all we have. I think we're going to be focused enough to play to each other, be connected as a team, and give ourselves the best possible chance. And we just foolish enough to think that we can go win these games. And we're going to go with that idea in mind that what we can control, maybe we might not control the outcome. We can control the process that we go through in preparation, mentally, emotionally, and physically, and let's just go see what happens.
Well, we always appreciate the time. By the way, tell Stan, I think the sport coat over the top of the casual look has kind of taken trend now. He looks good over there on the bench with CY and Smitty. I like it when you guys are dressing down casual, and Stan still throws that blazer on because he is a man of authority at the bench, right?
You know, I turn the TV on, and I see a lot of teams, everybody dressed, you know, like, you know, if you go to a Catholic school and everybody got the uniforms on.
That's right, you know, yeah.
You know, everybody's dressed alike. You know, I'm afraid that I will forget what everybody else is wearing, so I just don't even worry about it. We just try to have a school colors on and try to get through the game.
Hey, safe travels, my man. It is always a blast having you on here. We'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
You bet. Leonard Hamilton.
I mean, how cool is that guy? He's just a cool dude, Leonard Hamilton. He's having one of those years too, though. You know, they kind of remind me of Clemson football a little bit. You know, your standard becomes so high that when you have one of those years where, guess what, you just can't get out of bed without somebody getting hurt. You just kind of figure out a way to go win games, mm-hmm. right? And that's kind of what Florida State's been having to do. And that tough stretch of three straight weeks where they just didn't win a game, that can grind on you, man.
Do you sense, you remember, of course, when they won the ACC in Atlanta, they had Michael Snare and Davidas Dulkes and guys like that, right? You remember the team they had like a couple years prior to that? It was a team that was right around 500 in the ACC.
Would give you a night where they look good, and then a night where you're like, ah, what happened to those guys?
I mean,
this is going to come back to help Florida State.
Oh, my goodness.
I just think that, hey, you better get him now while you can, because mm-hmm. that he'll get energized even at the tender age of 39 years of age as their head coach. that, again, you know, that pity party, he's landed on pretty thick, but this will help them. I don't necessarily think short term, but long term it will.
Yeah. The depth, which has been the determinant for them and their success in the last two or three years, is what's been rocked the most by this.
No question.
Yeah.
No
so question. The old line change we talk about with Florida State, where I used to joke around and say they're putting the penalty kill out there, they're putting the power play out there, they can't do that right now.
And when you lose Malik Osborne with that kind of leadership, a guy that's been there, done that, I mean, it'd be one thing to have injuries, but it's always a key of who's going down with injury. Right. Losing Osborne was a big blow because he's a rock, man. He's so good.
Did you see him doing like keys to the game last week?
Yeah. I'm telling you, he's got some skill now.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Hey, Mark, Monday night, New York Life continues to present the tournament, A History of ACC Men's Basketball. Parts 5 and 6 begin at 9 p.m. This will take you through 1975 to about 1983. So it's going to start around 75, Phil Ford, the first freshman to win the MVP as the Case Awards, the MVP of the tournament, and take you through 83. Oh, yeah, cutting them down in Albuquerque. NC State's Cinderella ride. But speaking of Cinderella rides, before the Wolfpack, 7 years earlier, Landover, Maryland was the site of a historic ride for Virginia.
That would be an understatement. Mm-hmm. Wonderful Wally.
Yep.
Wahoo wah.
Cavaliers, remember now, this was Landover, Maryland. First ACC tournament held outside the state of North Carolina. Very controversial at the time move, right? Charles G. Lefty Driesell was part of that motion to get that thing out of North Carolina.
I remember playing basketball in the front yard after school with mm-hmm. the radio on, listening to all the ACC games. And again, being a big NC State fan yeah. back then, this group from Virginia tore right through the league on yep. the way to a title.
Sure did. Here is a look at 1976.
I was feeling it. If I got open, I was going to make the shot.
He's hot again. He's on a roll. He's out to prove something that he should have made first team, that he was one of the best five players in the conference. And this was kind of his redemption in process.
Wally Wonderful. Wally Wonderful was what he was called, and Wally just had the game of his life. I mean, bucket after bucket.
A couple of my friends mentioned how many times I was on him and he was getting the shot off on me. They did make that reference.
Behind Walker's 27 points, Virginia eliminated Maryland, pulling off its second straight upset and qualifying for their first ever ACC final.
It just seemed like all hell broke loose after we beat Maryland. Everybody at Virginia was going crazy, but for our team, it was a little different because we were exhausted.
None of us had ever played three games in three nights in our lives, at least formally, let alone in the ACC tournament. Billy Langland and I are roommates, and I do remember the next morning, Lang saying to me, "How are we going to play tonight?"
If Virginia was going to win their first ACC title, they were going to have to unseat defending champion North Carolina. It was a matchup that held extra meaning for Coach Terry Holland.
Right after Coach Holland became the coach of Virginia, Coach Smith evidently said on a radio program that Virginia wouldn't win an ACC game that year. So there were some hard feelings there. It's an understatement.
I think we created a rivalry with them after the Dean Smith words. I had put in my locker a picture of Dean Smith, and he motivated me the entire season. So I was very excited about the fact that we were going to be going against them.
The fourth-ranked North Carolina team was one of Dean's best, featuring five future first-round NBA draft picks. They were led by All-Americans Phil Ford and Mitch Kupchak, who both, unlike Wally Walker, had been chosen for the All-Conference first team. The Tar Heels were also fresher, having earned a first-round bye.
We really didn't know how we were going to summon up enough energy to play a championship game. We weren't sure of that. And they were loaded, so we weren't going to out-talent them. But the focus for us was, we got a game tonight. It's historic for us because we've never been to a championship game before. So, you know, hey, let's just, you know, play them and see what happens.
Oh, man. That's going to be awesome
that
Monday night.
You know, when we did our moments, our mm-hmm. ACC yeah. tournament moments, right. This was one of my top five.
Oh, yeah.
Was Virginia's run. Because I still remember it vividly. 1, 2, 3. They only won, four regular season games. And then had to win three straight. And, man, Wonderful Wally and Ivoroni and those guys. I mean, it was just a remarkable tournament. And the celebration afterwards was legendary.
Yeah. Where do you see kind of if you – don't remember or don't know how this turns out, you'll enjoy Monday mm-hmm. night. That'll be episode 5, and then episode 6 starts around 1981 and runs through 83. So that will include the build-up, and the next time the tournament returned to Landover was 5 years later in 81. 82, obviously, the Carolina-Virginia game, which was the shot clock game. 83 is NC State, Virginia at the Omni in Atlanta in the championship game. But there's so much more leading up to what NC State, Virginia became. So, and of course, the Wolfpack cuts the nets down in Albuquerque.
And the other thing, to just seeing that clip, the Terry Holland-Dean Smith rivalry,
oh boy,
was real.
Yeah, it was.
It was personal.
Yep.
And those two, while there was a respect factor in terms of what you do for a living, mm-hmm. your profession, make no mistake, Terry Holland wanted to beat Dean Smith in the worst kind of way. And I think Dean, too. I mean, that was a mutually respected edginess between those two guys.
And I think 76 then produced the next 6-7 years of Virginia-Carolina rivalries.
No question.
And including the Ralph Sampson recruiting.
No doubt about it.
Which came down to Virginia and Carolina, essentially. Yep. Now, Kentucky was rumored to be involved in things like that, but when Ralph came out of Harrisonburg High School, playing for the Blue Streaks, and then chose Virginia over Carolina, you know, it was hotly contested.
Didn't Terry Holland name his dog Dean?
That's what everybody said because it whined all night when they first got it.
That was the joke.
Yeah, it was the joke.
I don't know if that was true or not, but I'd heard it from too many people that Terry Holland named his dog Dean.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, there was an edge
to
Virginia, North Carolina.
The interesting part you're also going to find out is we're getting to an era where you're hearing a lot about first-team All-ACC and guys being excluded and things
bias.
Like that. Yeah, there is a time in the ACC where the five first-team All-ACC guys, those that were left off, provided momentum. And it goes back to a stat that comes through in the tournament over the years about either bench production or guys who are not first-team All-ACC who end up having big tournaments. And I'll just tell you this, that Michael DeVoe last year, Pack, became the fifth guy, or the 10th guy since 1990 not to be first-team All-ACC and win the Case Award. He also became the 15th guy to not be All-ACC period and win the Case Award.
I was going to say, it happens.
Oh, yeah. Joel Berry, our colleague here at ACC Network, was not all ACC, and he won the MVP in 16. So, I mean, it does happen. And you're getting ready to see that, you know, it's this event has good history.
And you know what? That could happen this year in Brooklyn. If you really consider the star power in this league and teams that could get on a run, you know, that doesn't fall into that category. Like a team like Virginia Tech. I mean, let's be honest. Are they going to have a first-team All-ACC player? At best, a reach, right? Mm-hmm. Could you see Virginia Tech going crazy in Brooklyn?
Yes.
Could you see a team like Syracuse going crazy in Brooklyn?
Yes, because they're built to hit shots.
Yeah, so.
I mean, a light goes on at Syracuse.
Right. I mean, so my point is that could happen again in 22, next month.
Those teams, the biggest issue those teams face is they do not want to be one of the bottom six.
Right.
Yeah.
No exactly question. Right.
Real quick, how about a little KenPom? Now you want to get analytics. Here we go.
Oh, we were on such a good run.
Well, this is actually, we're going to talk about bench here because a quick check here where we are, 3/4, almost 4/5 of the way through. Look at bench production in the ACC. And where we stand with this, because the teams that are getting the most bench percentage, according to Ken Pomeroy, minutes-wise, okay? Florida State is 8th, Louisville 14th, Clemson 149. Anything catch your eye there?
Yeah, a lot of numbers.
Pretty stiff drop into the 200s. Three teams in the top 150, and that's it. Now, remember, some of those bench minutes are also factored up at Florida State and Clemson by players that are not playing now because of injury.
Right.
So, mindful of that. Those numbers will fluctuate as the year goes on.
Let's roll the ball out. Let's keep score. Please. Please. I beg you.
No more analytics?
Please.
You don't want to do any, you know, how about a little luck factor? You want to roll some luck factor in there?
No, that was the worst ever.
When
you rolled out the luck factor, and I thought you guys were making the whole thing up, that's when I put it over. I lost it.
We don't do that. We don't make stuff up just to present it.
The luck factor.
All right.
Joke.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
A quick reminder to you, St. Pete Clearwater Elite Invitational presented by Wilson. You'll get Florida State and Michigan Saturday at 1 o'clock on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. Tiffany Green, Madison Shipman will be there to cover it for us. Lonnie and the Noles getting after it in St. Pete Clearwater. That's a heck of an event. Now you got 16 teams, 40 games. Starts tomorrow morning.
Anytime Wilson puts their name on it, you know it's going to be good. Quality. I'm glad. Softball, baseball is going to get cranked. I love it. Love it.
Yeah, springtime.
Especially since the Major League Baseball folks can't figure out a way to divvy up billions.
We're going to get minor leagues? We're going to get minor league baseball?
That bothers me. That whole thing bothers
me. We need to go down to the ballpark here in Charlotte. Maybe we have a little Packer and Durham night down there.
Nice. It's a nice park.
Man. I know. Truist Park, right? In the middle of Charlotte.
Beautiful.
Yeah, right there in the middle of Uptown.
Yep. ACC championships.
Let's take a look at what to watch for tonight, Mark Packer.
Sponsored by
Squarespace.
Yeah.
How about that, huh? All right.
Squarespace.
Let's give a clap. Oh, clap it up for Squarespace this morning.
I like that.
You betcha, Squarespace.
Nothing gets done until something gets sold.
Attaboy. Stitch that on a pillow, too. All right. You know we got a double dip for you. Pitt in Miami at 6, Georgia Tech and Notre Dame at 8. Right here on the friendly confines of the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network. Nothing but net in and after the ball games. There are the other five. Keeping your eye on that Louisville-Carolina game based on Kelly's reporting?
I'm really keeping an eye on Notre Dame-Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
There's a lot riding on that game. Louisville's playing lights out. North Carolina, see if they can be the spoiler tonight. With the way the Cardinals are playing, though, Courtney's girls better really bring their A game because I don't see Louisville backing up, do you?
No, I don't either. And I would offer you this. It sounds like BC Florida State is big tonight for Coach Mack and the Eagles. Road game?
Yeah, with what Kelly was talking about. But Notre Dame-Georgia Tech, there's a lot riding on that game. And the Irish coming off a thumping, and Georgia Tech survived that crazy game against Clemson in overtime.
Yeah.
So, again, the ladies center stage tonight. They are front and center.
All right, all that action for you coming up on ACC Network. If you were ever with us in the old days being, what, 3 years ago?
I was going to say, what are you talking about?
The old days being 3 years ago, we used to talk about birthdays, and I presented this theory that there's certain days where spectacular people are born, same days. You know? You remember when I did that?
This is your theory.
This is my theory. I think if you find somebody who might be a president, world leader, whatever it is, somebody of note, sports, business, life, society, what have you, there's typically somebody else that could be their equal born on the same day. And it happens more often than you think. Now, I know there's 365 days in West, everybody's got a birthday. But today is one of those days because today is Jim Brown's birthday. And today is Michael Jordan's birthday. Now, you go find me two better than those cats in their respective.
Well, I don't have enough time to look at the other 364 days. This sounds like it's in your jurisdiction. You're the scheduling guy. You're the birthday guy.
I will tell you.
I mean, there's people on this staff that thought I was born March 10th and made a big deal of it last year. I'm like, no, it wasn't my birthday
you
on
were.
March 10th.
The internet says you were born on March the 10th.
Wrong answer.
And March the 10th, we're going to celebrate a big birthday for you on March
right?
the 10th. Yeah, we are. We're going to have
you're
a
gonna
birthday,
be in Brooklyn?
By golly. And is that where we're going to be on the 10th? I think so, yeah. Yeah, Brooklyn. That's where we're going to celebrate it.
Celebrate
dinner.
That steak.
Greenberg
owes me.
For your birthday. We've already told him. So Michael Jordan and Jim Brown celebrate birthdays today.
That's awesome. Pretty good tandem.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, stop. Just stop then. You can't add any more than that.
Larry and the Paris Cable Hilton guy. Also born on February 17th.
That's disappointing.
See?
You're losing
so we got
steam.
The quad box. Paris Hilton, Larry the Cable Guy, Michael Jordan, Jim Brown.
See,
it works again.
One of those does not belong with the others.
Paris Hilton.
Paris, please.
Off to the side.
Over to the right. We'll catch you later. I don't know what it is you do. Other than have much, she must be one of those influencers.
Oh, my gosh.
Walks around their little dog.
Yes. There you go. Thanks a lot to Hayden Heidley and Clay Lout. for being a part of the show
today.
They
were great. The fact that they would agree to do it side by side, not in the same room, but they get together tomorrow night in the duels, NC State, North Carolina Wrestling. The wrestlers have been great. The coaches have been great.
Yep.
And appreciate those guys doing something. We had never done that before, ever, in 567 shows.
And we didn't have a fight breakout. Nobody got up and walked off the set.
Nope.
Which is kind of disappointing when you start talking about wrestling.
A little kumbaya. But it won't be there. Hey, tomorrow night, that won't be the case.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.